This is Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. Head north of Frederick on the side road instead of the highway, and about a dozen miles north before you get to Thurmont, you'll see some plain stone and log homes. They look old. They are old. Part of what's left of the village that used to surround an active iron furnace, the Catoctin Furnace. This weekend, the Catoctin Furnace Historical Society will celebrate that history with a crafts, plants, and food event. It's called Spring in the Village. One of the people who knows the history best is archaeologist Elizabeth Anderson Comer, who edited the newly published book, Catoctin Furnace, Portrait of an Iron-Making Village. And Elizabeth Anderson Comer joins me in the studio. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Let's start at the beginning, which was back in the 18th century, around the Revolutionary War. How did there come to be an iron-making furnace in the Catoctin Mountains?
Well, the early explorers and surveyors that went west from the very populated areas of Annapolis and Prince George's County were looking for natural resources in addition to other elements of the West, and they found that there was a confluence of lots of wood, good flowing water, iron ore, and limestone in the area of the Catoctin Mountains, right at the foot or the toe of the mountains near what is now Thurmont. And those elements together are perfect for an iron furnace. Those are the major things that you need. And so they purchased more than 10,000 acres. These were the Johnson brothers. One knew about iron. He was an iron master. Another became the governor of Maryland.
That was
one
Thomas.
Thomas, exactly. And then another was a lawyer, and another was a financier. So there were, everyone had their own specialty, but together they were a pretty formidable group of brothers, and they started the Catoctin Iron Furnace, and it was an excellent decision because the furnace, although it had waxes and wanes of its success, operated for more than 130 years, and it produced cannonballs that were used during the Revolution at the Battle of Yorktown. We're very proud of that, obviously. And it also produced beautiful stoves and kettles and pots and firebacks and items that are now found in museums like the Winterthur and Old Salem. We have one as well at the Historical Society. And these were beautifully crafted household items. So through the late 18th and all the way through the 19th century, the furnace was in operation and finally closing in 1903 when the technology had changed so much and the hot air Bessemer furnaces were being built in Pennsylvania and the anthracite coal was in Pennsylvania, and that was the death knell of the furnace. But 130 years is a long time.
And the iron ore was so plentiful. It lasted that the whole active period of the furnace.
We had more than a century. Exactly. At Catoctin, we had three iron banks, as they're called, and the ore banks, and they were used at different times. But yes, we never ran out of iron ore. We didn't run out of skilled labor or anything like that at Catoctin. It was just that eventually the technology was such that Pennsylvania sort of took the iron, it became the steel industry that powered us through the 20th century.
You mentioned the labor.
Yes.
This was pretty far away from the centers of commerce in Maryland. What was the labor force Revolutionary times?
Well, the labor force was brought with the Johnsons when the furnace was built. They brought many enslaved Africans to Catoctin Furnace and built the houses, the furnace itself, the roads, all of the elements of the furnace that had to be constructed were built in part by enslaved Africans. And we also know that enslaved Africans made many of the iron objects. We have a slave cemetery at Catoctin that tentatively burials date from 1770 to about 1840, and then the burials stop. And now in the Catoctin Furnace area, there are no descendants of these enslaved Africans. So one of our hopes is that we'll be able to identify descendants of these people who worked so hard to make the items that we associate with Catoctin Furnace, not just the iron objects that were crafted there, but the buildings and the furnace itself.
On 88.1, this is Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with archaeologist Elizabeth Anderson Comer about the Catoctin iron furnace and the village that it generated. She edited the book her late mother, Elizabeth Yorty Anderson, drafted. It's called Catoctin Furnace, Portrait of an Iron-Making Village. I want to delve back into the history. We talked a bit about the role that the furnace played in the Revolutionary War, Yorktown being the decisive battle in 1781. In the War of 1812?
The War of 1812, we don't think they were making any munitions. When the furnace began during the Revolution, just after the Declaration of Independence, there were frantic letters from the Continental Congress asking the Johnsons to make cannonballs, to make cannons, to make anything that they could for the cause, because obviously we couldn't buy our munitions from the British. The Redcoats were shooting at us, and so we had to make our own, and there were not a lot of sources. So Catoctin was writing back saying, we can do this as quickly as, you know, it'll be a couple weeks, but we'll do it. So they made munitions, and we know from the letters that they were used at the Battle of Yorktown, but then they were never paid in full. So more correspondence for years and years and years, going well into the 19th century, trying to get paid by, you know, the new country.
The new federal government.
The new federal government. And so one of the things that the federal government said was some of the cannonballs were defective. Well, and they may have been. We know some were not defective because they write about the fact that they worked at the Battle of Yorktown, and we all know we won, so this was good. But apparently some, according to them, some were defective. And since they never got paid, I think that they got cold feet about dealing with munitions. It's a pretty specialized type of manufacture. And what they started doing was making things that were still precise, but maybe not as precise, if you will. So they made these beautiful cast iron firebacks and 9-plate stoves and 10-plate stoves and kettles and pots and andirons and salt pans and just all kinds of things for the household, which was a great market because what were we doing? We had huge westward expansion, lots of people coming to the New World, you know, to settle. And so there was a real market, if you will. And they did very well making those items.
So in the Civil War, they were not producing munitions?
They never produced munitions again.
Tell us about the event on Saturday.
Well, our Spring in the Village is our second. We started this last year to celebrate Mother's Day and the heirloom plants that are still in the village, the traditional refreshments, the recipes we still have from the village, crafts that would have been similar to things made in the village, blacksmithing, woodworking. And so it's a way to get people to the village to obviously buy some wonderful spring and Mother's Day gifts, but also to show off the rich culture of the community.
Well, thanks for coming in to tell us about it.
Well, thank you.
Archaeologist Elizabeth Anderson Comer edited the book her late mother, historian Elizabeth Yorty Anderson, wrote. It's called Catoctin Furnace, Portrait of an Iron-Making Village. At our website, we have more information about the book and about the Spring in the Village events and crafts on Saturday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. That's all at WYPR.org. Click on the Maryland Morning link. More of this interview there, too. Stay with us on 88.1.